Dr. Google can't fix your knee. The Joint Relief Institute can. Fast joint pain relief, covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Today is Friday. I'm not going to sing it. It's February 26th, 2016. This is John Williams, and we are the Mincing Rascals. You can hear me in WGN Radio Saturdays at 1. And on Facebook, I'm King John. We're joined by Kristen McQuarrie. She's an editorial writer and columnist for the Chicago Tribune. Hi, Kristen.
Hello.
Eric Zorn is here, too, a columnist for the Chicago Tribune. Hello, Mr. Zorn.
Hello, John.
We are joined today not by Steve Bertrand from WGN Radio, but our good friend Scott Stantis, editorial cartoonist and writer for the Chicago Tribune. Hi, Scott Stantis. How are you?
I'm good, John Williams. You're not John Williams.
I always appreciate you. Yes, I am John Williams.
You are
Williams.
John Williams. Where am I?
I stumbled on the introduction, too. Like, hi, what, Kristen. Why? And I was like, hi? What's wrong with us?
I know.
We need more coffee.
I know why, because I think I'm in the bad habit of going to Steve and Eric first. And I thought, well, I shouldn't do that. I'm going to make a point to make sure I introduce Kristen first. And I think I caught you napping over there.
I think your failure to sing caught her off guard.
Yeah. Here is today's first topic. Let's talk about the presidential election a little bit, shall we?
Do we have to?
So it looks like Donald Trump is going to be the nominee. Are we all on
page on
that?
Can we talk about anything else?
No. In fact, we cannot. I was on a conference call yesterday with a talk show host in Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, and St. Louis. And to the person, they all said, it's all Trump, all the time, all around the country. Isn't it interesting that as important as presidential elections are to us in this country, and they are, we are all like out of our minds wrapped up in the nomination process. I'll bet this has never happened. I've never seen people so interested in who the nominees are on both sides. It's almost like the election is a foregone conclusion, like anticlimactic. That won't be the case, but it's hard to imagine it would be more dramatic than this ramp-up has been. Scott, you would agree with me on that, right?
Oh, it's insanity. And as far as Trump goes, they've done some studies, and he gets 8 times more coverage than any of the other candidates in that primary. He has built this juggernaut. I've never seen anything like this. I can't compare it to anything else. He has built a juggernaut of a campaign almost exclusively on mainstream media coverage. I mean, in cable news. It is
well, and as long as he doesn't win, he's done the party a favor then, hasn't he?
I can't imagine him not winning now.
The nomination.
Yeah, I can't imagine him not being the nominee. And frankly, I can start to see him win the election, which is...
I don't think so.
Why?
Because I just don't think the demographics of the country will support a candidate like Trump when up against someone who is going to... Hillary Clinton, I think, will win the Democratic nomination, and she will fashion herself as more of a moderate, responsible, textured candidate, and she will win those independent votes.
But in spite of herself.
Correct.
And this could be the fault of the Republican Party, but, I mean, that's what Rubio's been trying to do, and he's Mr. 15%. Cruz comes off as very, you know, he's obviously extremely conservative, would seem to have great appeal to the base. He's an incredibly articulate, great debater, and he's getting 15%.
Did we watch the debate Thursday night?
I was actually at the Hawks game, but I was watching updates on my phone because I'm a dork.
Pretty amazing. I mean, the other two are. I think it would have been interesting if last night one of them had, rather than engage, because it was 2-on-1, both of them just punching Trump all they could. What if Rubio or Cruz had just talked about policy points, issues, you know?
Boring.
And they've tried that.
Well,
no, it's not going to work. And I thought it was interesting last night.
Punching back doesn't work either, Eric.
It was disgraceful. I thought that debate was awful.
I do, too.
They were yelling and screaming over each other.
And there was desperation.
Yeah, you gave him $5,000.
He never funded me.
And by the way, let's be clear. Donald claims to care about
him. Yeah, why? I didn't want to, but he sent me his book with his autograph.
Donald, I understand rules
Mr.
are very
Trump,
hard for you.
You're doing a great job.
Confusing.
I have his book.
Okay,
yeah,
that,
on your reality
Trump,
TV show, not in public.
Thank you for the book. Go ahead.
Donald, you can get back on your
meds. We had a lot of fun
now.
Up here tonight, I have to tell you. Thank you for the book. I really
Donald, relax.
Go ahead. I'm relaxed. You're the basket case. Go ahead. Don't get nervous.
My name is nothing about you that makes anyone nervous. You're losing so badly, you don't know what's happening.
Gentlemen.
Wolf, I'm going to ask that my time not be deducted when he's yelling at
take control.
And one thing that really came out to me watching this, and it's been obvious all along, Trump has nothing. He has nothing but slogans. And I thought that was a very interesting exchange about health care. And they were trying, all the candidates and the moderator were trying to press Trump on what his health care plan is. And it amounts to getting rid of the boundaries. The state, you know, every health care has, you can't sell health care plans across state lines. And this is, it's one of the things that a lot of Republicans have talked about is getting rid of that requirement. But it's just a component part of a broader health care plans that Republicans have. This is all Trump has. He has no other ideas, apparently. He kept repeating that as though this is going to solve all the problems. His competition is going to be great. And they kept trying to get him to say more, and he couldn't because he doesn't have anything. And then as you start looking at what he says through that lens, you realize that he has nothing on just about every topic. He has a couple of points. And Rubio pointed this out. He said, look, I get criticized for being robotic and repeating something over and over again. All Donald Trump has is, we're going to make America great, I'm going to build a wall, and I'm leading in the polls. That's about all Trump has to say.
He clicked off five, and it was, I thought,
five,
you know,
yeah,
as far,
really,
but I mean, as far as jousting goes, I thought that was a good point, because there he was happily owning his repetitiveness and then rightly putting it right back on Trump. There's no there. It's just five slogans, and he keeps repeating them over and over again. I think Trump also imagines, and maybe this is being fair to him, that what he's going to do about health care and any of these issues is he's going to get some people that know about that stuff. He'll hire a team. He'll get the best people in the world, and they'll figure it out for him so that he isn't very deep on these issues. I don't even think matters to his supporters, Eric. I think they know he doesn't know, and they don't care. He'll get the people that do.
Yeah, this election isn't about smart, and it's not about ideas. It's about emotions, and it's about anger. And I think on both sides, that the ascent of Bernie Sanders is another example, although I think that's going to end after the Super Tuesday coming up. It's a remarkable cycle. It's almost impossible to think. I'm kind of a history geek on the presidency. I cannot think of with the exception of the 1860 election. I'm not kidding. And that was, the country was falling apart and going into civil war. I can't think of another election that is this weird with this many strange twists and turns and the ultimate nominee going to be this nuts.
Well, especially since we're not on the verge of a civil war. We're not on the verge of a financial crisis. All of the things that you think would precipitate some crazy departure aren't there right now. On this conference call, I said to the guys, I didn't realize we were that angry as a country. And the guy in Pittsburgh said, oh, they're angry here. A third of Allegheny County is earning $30,000 a year, and that's a family of four. That's not a lot of money. So there's this sort of income gap, and people are struggling a lot more than the leading economic indicators,
So one still, of the, it's interesting to me, that look, you, as you look forward, Super Tuesday, it looks like Cruz may win in Texas. And then the following week, Rubio has a chance to win his. This is Cruz's home state, obviously. Rubio has a pretty good chance, although he's losing in the polls right now, of taking Florida. And John Kasich has a pretty good chance of taking his home state of Ohio. And so you've got these candidates who are still in the race. They're all hanging around, and they've got this path to plausibility right now. And so I think a one-on-one race with Trump and somebody else, Trump ends up getting edged out, but as long as he keeps these other candidates in the race, he's managing to pile up these pluralities. He hasn't won a majority in any of these races yet, but he's certainly won a plurality. And
but he's got 82 delegates. Cruz is in second place behind him with 17. Rubio 16.
But how many required
numerically,
for the nomination? Numerically,
1,352 or something like that.
Yeah, it's over 1,000.
But if he does well on Super Tuesday, which I think he's going to, because a lot of those states are winner takes all. I just think mathematically, it's almost a certainty that Trump is going to be the nominee.
I don't love this delegate process. It seems to me like, especially when you talk about the Democrats and superdelegates, Hillary's killing Bernie on the delegate count. And yet it seems to me like their race is a lot closer than that, you know?
Well, Bernie wins New Hampshire, and Hillary walks away from that with more delegates.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, because the superdelegates don't have to conform to what the vote is. They're already decided, and they can vote as they want. At least that's the way they do it in Minnesota. I know that much about superdelegates, but it just doesn't seem to be all that democratic.
Superdelegates are going to follow the electorate, though. I think, you know, right now they're pledged to Hillary Clinton. I don't think that the superdelegates would risk putting that kind of a schism into the party. If Bernie Sanders heads into that convention with a stronger showing than Hillary Clinton among elected delegates, I don't think the superdelegates are going to reverse that decision. I think that would just be catastrophic for the party.
I don't think there's any way that they're going to... We don't think that Bernie's going to be as much. Maybe he's been good for Hillary, the party, the country. By golly, he's highlighted an issue. Does anybody that I'm talking to right now think that Bernie Sanders has a chance of winning the nomination?
I don't.
Nope.
No. I mean, that's too bad. Eric does, I think. Eric, are you going to vote for Bernie Sanders? Are you feeling the burn?
No and no. I don't think he's going to win the nomination, and I don't plan to vote for him right now.
What did you all make of Donald Trump's line after he won in Nevada, where he said, "We did so well in every demographic, the rich, the poor, the highly educated, and yes, the poorly educated. I love the poorly educated," and everybody screamed and applauded. Scott, what was your take on
those
that?
Are his people. What can I tell you? Trump, this guy, when he said he can go to Times Square and shoot someone or shoot a puppy and still go up in the polls, I think he's proving us experts here completely wrong. And he's
Scott, what are Republican Scott and Kristen, what are Republican leaning folks going to do if he's the nominee? And you've got Hillary Clinton on the other side.
I cannot. Honest to goodness, I can't tell you how often I've had this conversation over the last 3 or 4
days.
And
you don't have to tell me who you're going to vote for, but what do you think they're going to do?
Who's they? Republican voters?
Yeah, just Republican voters. People somewhat like yourselves.
I think the only people that Trump will lose at the end of the day are really hardcore, principled conservatives who cannot vote for someone who, you know, isn't really a true conservative. The National Review Online crowd. And I don't know if they'll stay home, if they'll rally around, you know, a Bloomberg candidacy, which I don't.
Well, but they
see
would show
unlikely.
Up to vote against Hillary, wouldn't they, Kristen?
They might, but I don't know. This is a core group of voters who aren't the type who are willing to hold their nose and cast a vote for someone who they find to be unqualified. But it's a small. I would say it's a small.
Well, I'm one of those people. I cannot vote for this petulant child who will be the Republican nominee. I just can't do it. So I would probably end up voting Libertarian, which is always my fallback position. I can't vote for Hillary. I mean, that'd be
insane. But that is. That's a vote for Hillary, isn't it?
Yes. Okay. No, I'm voting for what I want. I'm voting for what I believe in.
No, I know that. But, I mean, that's too bad for you, right, Scott? Because that's the choice you're left with. That's the attitude. That's what happened. And the Republicans know that. Did you hear Lindsey Graham?
Oh, Lord.
He said, we are like a bunch of people who saw the movie The Titanic and then were getting on the boat anyway. And the boat is Donald Trump. It's like, okay, well, this is the Titanic, and you know what happens? It's going to sink, and we're all going to drown. And then they all walk merrily onto the boat, or not merrily, but that's what is happening right before our eyes. I think that metaphor is apt. You're going to end up with Trump as your candidate, and then you're either not going to vote for him, maybe you're going to vote for somebody else, but Hillary's going to get the other side. Trump is Hillary's ticket.
Does anybody think the Supreme Court issue is going to play into this election? I mean, it does for me. I think it's really important. I've always thought the Supreme Court is really important. But I don't know that even with the current situation, I don't know that it's going to animate just rank-and-file voters.
Well, I read a piece, I think it was in the might have been in the New York Times, that kind of mimicked what you were saying last week, Eric, that once Obama puts a face to this and chooses someone highly qualified, that it will, in fact, motivate voters, especially perhaps on the Democratic side, to come out, and that it might improve turnout numbers. So, there is that theory out there.
Well, who would you—I mean, if you're advising the president, do you go with someone that everyone can like? Let's say there are a couple of judges on the appellate court who have been confirmed fairly recently, 97-0, and put that forward, or do you just go all in and you push in
Alan Dershowitz or something?
Yeah. I mean, which way do you go?
I think you would have to choose someone who's more If we're going to be playing politics, he has to choose someone who would be very difficult for the Republicans to vote against. Well, if he throws out a really progressive left-leaning, then he makes their case for them.
I thought it was a very interesting poker play earlier this week when they were floating the name of Governor Sandoval, who pulled his name back, but he's a Republican, a moderate Republican. I thought that would have been a very interesting situation if he put
it's a little
knock this guy down, because the risk that Republicans take, I do agree with Kristen, I think he's going to put somebody forward who's going to be moderate, that they're going to say, well, okay, if we reject this person, and then President Hillary Clinton or President Bernie Sanders, they're probably not going to nominate someone quite as moderate. So it's a risk they're taking.
Yeah, but it's also a little counterintuitive, because if the president put forward somebody who was maybe his dream, liberal activist justice, suppose he has somebody up his sleeve like that, and he says, you know, screw it, it's my last year, I'm just going to do what I want to do. Look how that helps the Republican candidates. Then there's Ted Cruz saying, see, you've got to elect me as president because this is the Democrat agenda. So Barack Obama actually helps the Republican candidates if he comes forward with a liberal-sounding justice. You see my logic on that?
I do, and I think it's sound.
Well, lucky for me. Okay, let's segue from all of this, unless there's something else, Scott or Kristen, you want to insert about the campaign and where it is right now?
No? Let's move on.
Let's talk. Well, Scott has been somewhat animated about this Apple FBI story, which continues to roll. And by the way, I'll just start by saying, Scott, the more I think about it, the more I think I'm on Apple's side.
Yeah.
That seems un-American. Where are you on this one?
Well, I'm going on their side because it seems un-American for FBI or any federal agency to approach a company and ask them to, and not ask, but demand a company produce a product. For those listeners not totally familiar, the shooter in San Bernardino left his iPhone. You need a 4-digit code to open it. But if you enter the wrong code, what is it, 5, 10 times?
10.
It locks it. It gets rid of all the information. Apple has been very helpful in the investigation. They gave him all the information this guy had up on the cloud. What's in that phone is what happened the last, 10 days, 2 weeks of prior to the attacks. Who was he talking to or whatever? Can I ask, this is a little off color, I guess, but I wanted to ask this question. He's dead, right? The shooter is dead. Doesn't he have a hand? Because it's an iPhone 6, and it uses a thumbprint, as well as the 4-digit code. Where's the body? Why can't they just get the thumb and put it on the pad? I'm serious.
I had the same thought, except I think that once the phone powers down and you power it back up again, you can't use the fingerprint. You have to use the code first.
Right.
I think that's true.
Yeah, no, it is true. Yes, it's true. Yes, thank you.
Well, are you kidding me? I didn't know that about the iPhone 6. Is that an option? It's not mandatory that you...
It is an option, yes. The thumbprint.
The thumbprint, but Eric's also correct in that if it went powered all the way down, which I guess it did.
Who knows?
Because that would only
explain it. It's a good question, though.
Yeah, why not just grab the guy's...
Dig up the body and give it a shot, huh?
Yeah.
Is that what you...
Yes. I mean, but here, I think that the bigger issue here is not just demanding that Apple open up a security Pandora's box for their product, but more importantly, it's another... right to privacy issue, in my view. And this has become so eroded in the country, it becomes almost laughable. But even yesterday, when the story about, the FBI and Apple, the DEA, the Drug Enforcement Agency, was caught eavesdropping tens of thousands of times when they'd had no warrants to do it. And they walked it back saying, oops, our bad. They had many arrests from it. So there, some good came up from it. But how much are we willing to give up? And it seems a lot.
Yeah, I think you're on to something there. There was a case in Chicago this past week, and I don't think I read it in the Tribune. Maybe I did, but it was about a fraud case, kind of a run-of-the-mill banking, passport, taxes sort of fraud case. And the guy had information on his phone, and the government, and I don't know if this was exactly like this, was it Apple that was being asked to sort of unlock the guy's phone so they could get that information, or some other government agency? And I thought, boy, this is the slope we're going down. I know that none of us want to sort of defend the bad guys, but don't all citizens have a right to privacy? And that includes what's on their phone. And it has to be extraordinary circumstances where we're going to let the government open it up or mandate that a company open it up like that.
Well, an interesting way to think about this is, what if the government had the capacity, had the power, and as is sometimes rumored online and in these paranoid chat rooms, to record every phone call, every text, every email, and just like store it all automatically, and then they could go and get it if they wanted it through a search. If they had that capacity, and that's kind of what we're talking about here, right? Which is like, is the ability to go in and sort of retrospectively yank out everything but voice calls. Yeah. And do we want them to have that power? And I think the answer is no. We don't want them to have that power, even though it would help law enforcement. I mean, there are so many compromises we make between freedom and safety, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
And
boy, that's daunting, though. Imagine what you're even suggesting there, Eric. I mean, think of all of the phone calls or all the listening. I mean, this is like 9/11 or, for that matter, San Bernardino. They had that information, but you've got to have somebody paying attention to it and then acting on it in real time. It's overwhelming, isn't it?
Yeah, and of course, and the other side of me says, well, I don't got anything to hide, so I don't care that much myself personally. I know that it's small thinking to think that way, those are the two things that are at war within me about this case, which is like, you know, I do understand the need for law enforcement to go after things. On the other hand, I think, as Scott points out, with the DEA, the government has not proved to be particularly trustworthy with this kind of power. And that also gives me a great deal.
Right after 9/11, the FBI literally was given right for a limited number of warrantless eavesdropping, right? Within 10 days, they'd gone over 50,000 of them. And I think the number they were allowed to do was somewhere in the neighborhood of like 150.
So don't you all, do Scott, though, feel a little, I mean, think about what we're talking about, though. San Bernardino, who's that guy connected to? Is there some plot to shoot up another building or school or something? And that information may be on that guy's phone. The FBI isn't really interested in all of us. I know that's kind of a, like you said, Eric, that's small thinking. But do you all feel a little apprehensive about going against the government on this? They are the good guys,
I'm
right?
I'm not going against the government here. I'm standing up for a constitution that guarantees us these rights, and that's what I'm standing up for here, I feel.
We're getting in our own way, though, aren't we? We're kind of cutting off our nose.
Oh,
aren't we?
We're scared. We're scared that some idiot with a gun is going to, or with a, you know, a suicide bomber is going to walk into our workspace or our cafe or whatever, and we're scared. And animals do stupid things when they're scared. And we are stupid animals right now, and we're doing stupid things. We're scared.
Yeah. Well, so that's the world we're going to live in, right? I mean, in the name of individual liberty and personal freedom, that's the deal you're going to carve out here, right, Scott?
Yeah.
You'll trade one for the other.
Yes.
And that's and I understand why some people aren't on that. The people who say, hey, come on, let's not shoot up another building. Open up that guy's phone. Apple, you must open up the phone. I understand the logic train in that. That's for sure. Kristen, you've been a little silent on this, but I know that you're kind of agreeing with everything we're saying, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think, I just think this is big government. And as Scott opened, Apple does participate with and does cooperate with the FBI routinely. And in the story that you cited, it was in the Tribune. It was a local case. And there are thousands of cases where Apple cooperates and hands over whatever information law enforcement needs. This is different. This is a case where they are asking Apple to crack its own code and put at risk all of our privacy. And so, I mean, we can use the scare tactic. What if there's another terrorist attack? It's on this phone. We could stop it. I am not willing to give up freedom or force a company to, bow down to the big hand of government in order for this possibility that might exist. The government, we spend $600 billion a year on defense, Pentagon and the Defense Department. Figure it out themselves. You figure out a way to crack the code. Stop asking this private company to do it.
By the way, Eric suggested that we ask Kristen to call out for us some of the more local Illinois races that she thinks are particularly interesting. I don't know if you have one that, if you were going to highlight for us today, Kristen, you thought, boy, that Cook County race or that downstate race is sure an interesting example of X. But as you interview candidates and examine state and local issues, is there one that stands out or two for you today?
Quickly, the state's attorney's race, we just posted our endorsement online. We're endorsing Kim Fox. She is challenging Anita Alvarez, the incumbent state's attorney in this case, kind of turns on this whole Laquan McDonald case that became an international story. And we just sort of decided, you know, that in some ways is a fatal mistake, that the law enforcement did not release that video until, you know, their hands were absolutely tied. So that's kind of a crucial race everyone is watching.
Yeah.
And then I would just point to one other. It's actually downstate, based in Springfield. But it really pits our freshman governor against AFSCME, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. There's an incumbent Republican who is aligned with AFSCME, and Governor Rauner is dumping tons of money in the opponent's race. And it will just come down to kind of Rauner versus organized labor. And that will be
it's a very interesting proxy fight, because the incumbent Republican only he cast one single vote, right? It's the only
That's actually not true. That's what he's saying, but I went combed through his voting record. I mean, there were probably 10, 15, 20 you know, he voted against pension reform. He has voted with AFSCME on everything, and I interviewed him and said, "Is there some vote you can point to where you stood up to AFSCME leadership?" And he couldn't point to one.
You said the governor is dumping money into his opponent's campaign in the primary, or is the governor endorsing a Democrat here?
In the primary. So it's a fellow Republican, but Rauner is dumping money into some Democratic races where he thinks these Democrats will be more independent of the House Speaker, Michael Madigan.
Yeah. I wonder if that's precedented. That sounds weird, doesn't it?
It's really weird.
It's very interesting, that race that Kristen points to, and also the race up here in Chicago, Ken Duncan against Juliana Stratton. Duncan is the incumbent Democrat who has been challenging Speaker Madigan and has been aligned with Rauner. Rauner's dumping a lot of money into Duncan's campaign, and then in labor and so on is behind Stratton, the challenger. Both of these are seen as proxy fights. Madigan versus Rauner, and both of them are really ugly campaigns, really nasty, and I think very consequential. I'd be very interested to see how those turn out. So.
Is the Tribune endorsement going to hurt Anita Alvarez?
I mean, I think it will help Kim Fox. I think Anita Alvarez just really has an uphill battle and has from the beginning. I'm not sure how much her opponent, Kim Fox, also got the endorsement of the Sun-Times. I don't know.
And the Daily Herald, too, I believe.
And the Daily Herald, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, and last question about all of that. Is that, in a way, a reflection on Rahm Emanuel's leadership, too? I mean, is this a shot across the bow for him?
I don't think so. I mean, he's, you know, he was reelected in April, so, there's no chance for us to really take him to task.
What are you going
to
do? Yeah.
But I think that voters may be because this is the only chance that voters have to express their dismay over the Laquan McDonald case, which a lot of it is at Emanuel's feet. So although, you know, this endorsement is about Alvarez and Fox, I think for voters this may be their chance to express some feelings about him.
And doesn't this boil down to, this is a Rahm versus Tony Preckwinkle race. I mean, Fox is Preckwinkle's creature. And
she is, but Rahm has not played a big role in this race. I mean, I think maybe he's quietly supporting Anita Alvarez, but he has not been at the forefront as, like, I mean, Tony Preckwinkle has. She has devoted every resource possible to getting Kim Fox elected, but I don't see Rahm as being a big player in this
race. I'm sure Alvarez calls Rahm every morning, don't say anything about me, please. Don't endorse me, whatever you do today.
That can work against you. Recommendations for the week. Eric Zorn, go first. What are we reading, watching, or listening to that sure caught your eye or ear?
Last week tonight, John Oliver, last Sunday night, there's a really excellent segment that he did about these targeted regulations of abortion providers laws that are going on around the country where states are trying to crack down on abortions. It's going to be heard in front of the Supreme Court on March 2nd. John Oliver did a wonderful takedown of these laws. It's on YouTube, and I think Decker will put the link onto our face on the Mincing Rascals page.
So. Yeah, no kidding. Excellent. How about you, Scott Stannis? What do you like lately?
Too quickly. I just finished the autobiography of John Cleese, which is fascinating. If you like writing and you like creativity and how that process works, it's a terrific read. Although he writes a lot about cricket. a lot. That's the one thing. And I scored, I scored 20 rumpers or whatever the hell
chucker,
they call it.
Chucker.
Yeah, whatever.
Did you see the 60 Minutes piece they did years ago on how impenetrable the rules are of that game? They tried to understand it and present it to America, and it just became a comedy.
I had a friend come over from Germany years ago and took him to a baseball game, and you talk about an impenetrable game.
Yes.
You don't realize it because you grew up with it, but how incredibly strange the game is. So I'm not.
It is got
so
a lot
I'm
of
not going to judge cricket like an ugly American.
So back to you, Scott. So what is you are recommending what now?
John Cleese autobiography. So Anyway is the name of it. So
and was there another book?
No, well, there was also a series. If I can jump in real quick with another one. Reason Magazine has come out with a series of videos and interviews on economics and politics, and they are fascinating. If you really want to look at come on issues sideways, they're terrific. And Nick Gillespie, who's the editor of Reason, is a very good interviewer. It's delightful. Reason. If you want to learn, if you don't want shouting, if you don't want an interruption, you want to learn something new, you should watch these.
No shouting. No thanks.
Kristen McQuarrie?
I am just way behind what's cool, and I am finally catching up and binge-watching Homeland.
How is that?
I know. It's from like 2000.
What season are you in?
One. And I'm on probably episode 8 or 9, so I have a long way to go.
Where is this online? Is it on?
We're watching it on Apple. Showtime.
On Showtime? Oh,
yeah, it's a Showtime series.
Oh, okay. So it's on iTunes then? You can.
I don't know.
Because I've been told it's really good, too. I was going to say.
Oh, Eric, you haven't watched it either.
No.
I have that warm glow about me when I just step back and watch somebody, and I think, oh, you're in for a nice ride, my friend. Somebody once told me they were going to now start watching West Wing, and this wasn't that long ago.
Really?
And I kind of clasped my hands like, oh, you're in for such a wonderful journey. I remember how good it was for me the first time. And you're going to love it. Some seasons are better than others, but the first two are compelling. You must be enjoying it so far, right, Kristen?
It's great, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, my book recommendation this week, I just interviewed and have been reading, I haven't finished it, but I will, a book called Andy Warhol Was a Hoarder. It's by Claudia Kalb, and it's about a bunch of famous personalities, Einstein, Marilyn Monroe, Andy Warhol. Who's the architect who's designed all of the homes in Oak Park and so forth?
Frank Lloyd Wright?
Yeah, pardon me, Frank Lloyd Wright. And she talks about not just their idiosyncrasies, but, you know, their mental illnesses that they had to struggle with, how they did it, how it impacted their art or their science, and what it might have been like for them if they had had the resources that we have today. It's just fascinating, anecdotally, to read about these people and how they sort of got around or channeled through their psychoses. And it's called Andy Warhol Was a Hoarder. Just chapter by chapter, you read about these people. It's very, very interesting. And that's my recommendation, too.
Yay.
And that's the Mincing Rascals. Hey, Scott Stannis, thanks for joining us this week.
Well, thanks for having me.
You can read Scott Stannis' cartoons and watch them, look at them in the Chicago Tribune and online. Read Eric Zorn at chicagotribune.com/Zorn and Kristen McQuarrie, editorial writer for the Chicago Tribune. I'm John Williams. Thank you, Eric Zorn. Thank you again, Eric Zorn, just for being Eric Zorn. Thank you, Kristen Decker, our producer, and Bob Ferguson, who engineers these podcasts. I'm John Williams, and we'll drop another one next week.
Bye-bye.
All right, kids.
You little rascal, you! You little rascal, you! You little rascal, you!
Our main story tonight concerns breast implants. Some are against them, others believe they're fine in rare cases, and many believe you should be able to get them whenever the fuck you want. Sorry, did I say breast implants? I meant abortions. Tonight's main topic concerns abortions. And look, before you change the channel, I know this is a polarizing topic. Although, interestingly, when the website Vox asked people in the street for their opinions, the issue wasn't quite as binary as it's usually presented.
If I had to pick, I would say that I'm pro-choice, but personally, I'm more on a somewhere in the middle.
I wouldn't, but I can't choose for other people.
I'm pro-life. I think when the baby gets a heartbeat, that should be the cutoff point. That's just my stance. I'm not the kind of guy, like, I want everyone to follow my stance.
Okay, well, not needing anyone to follow your stance is a healthy attitude to abortion, and it's also a terrible attitude with which to lead the Rockettes.
The Mincing Rascals podcast is distributed by the WGN Plus Podcast Network. You can listen on the WGN Plus app or online at WGNplus.com, or you can subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes.